Now, look, sport has often acted as a bit of a platform to promote the advancement of social equality, and I think rights of the LGBTQIA community are certainly no exception of that. When athletes travel, they can find themselves in countries with poor track records for rights, and that's certainly what happened during the 2014 Sochi Winter Olympic Games. And I guess that time saw Russia's stance on homosexuality come under some fairly intense media scrutiny. And look, we still see major sporting events such as the 2022 World Cup in Qatar and the 2022 Winter Olympics in China, basically heading towards countries with fairly conservative attitudes, to put it politely, towards the LGBTQIA community. So, are we making any progress when it comes to shifting those rights abuses in terms of the world of sport? Well, Dr. Ryan Storr is from Western Sydney University. Dr. Storr, a very good morning to you.
Good morning.
Now, look, do you think we put an undue pressure on athletes when it comes to being a platform for social change? Or why do you think we have so much pressure on them, perhaps, is a better way of putting it?
Yeah, it's a difficult one. Look, in terms of athletes being used as a platform and speaking out, at the end of the day, it's completely 100% up to them. So we've seen with this Sochi Olympics, Adam Rippon and Gus Kenworthy have been quite outspoken, and they're pretty comfortable talking about some of these issues. And for other athletes, they might not want to make their sexuality a big deal as such, or they might not feel comfortable using it as a platform to talk about. So I think there sometimes is a lot of pressures on athletes to be used as these beacons of social change. But we have to remember as well, with when they're competing, a lot of the time they're so focused on what they're doing. It can often, well, some people have talking about it, it has been a distraction. But it's important in terms of some of the countries where the Rainbow Index, for example, in Russia and South Korea, isn't as good. So the sporting organisations and world bodies often think, right, we'll use this opportunity to try and advance human rights within those countries. But often it kind of doesn't really translate into practices.
Look, you mentioned the Rainbow Index. Can you actually explain how that works?
So the Rainbow Index basically is like a benchmarking system. So it's kind of on a global scale, and it ranks, it's basically to do with policies, policies and laws within that country that gives indications to human rights for LGBT people. So it's based on things like marriage equality, whether people can access certain certain healthcare systems and that type of thing. So it's generic. It's used as a benchmarking system. So obviously in some of these countries there are basically no laws or regulations. And we've got to remember as well, with the Commonwealth, I think out of the 54 countries or thereabouts, it's about 30 to 40 countries that still criminalise homosexuality and same-sex activity. And many countries it's still punishable by death. So in terms of we still do have a long way to go, and sports often try to be used to help that.
That is actually a frightening statistic. How does Australia stack up on the Rainbow Index out of interest?
Oh, you're testing me. At the top of my head, I think it was in kind of the top 10.
Okay.
I think the UK and some European countries are there. But in terms of Australia would probably fare a lot better, because I know in the last couple of years there's been a lot of development around policy change, starting by the marriage equality and things like that. But things like young trans people being able to access hormones outside the family court, etc. So there has been a lot of developments in Australia around generic LGBT rights. But sport, again, sport is slow to catch up with. We've started seeing it around the AFLW Hannah Mountie decision. But again, there's still a lot of work to be done. So, for example, the AFLW are having a pride round on Friday between Carlton and the Western Bulldogs. There's been a bit of media attention because Carlton didn't actually publicly support marriage equality, and the AFLW didn't actually let Hannah Mountie play. Now they're having this pride round to celebrate LGBTI diversity. So there's a lot of different issues, and it's an interesting one.
Is there some concern that some sports are kind of bandwagging after the fact, I guess, to sort of get that media attention?
Yeah. So at any particular opportunity, there's a lot of kind of happy talk and lip service model of diversity around LGBTI stuff. A good example is Mardi Gras. So a lot of corporates and sports, especially around the marriage equality, kind of saying, yes, we support this. We believe every Australian should play our sport. And then actually, when you look at it, they haven't, don't have any policies. They've never done anything around it. So the equivalent of the Rainbow Index is the Pride and Sport Index in Australia. So the top score last year was 36 out of 100, and that was the AFL.
Wow.
So that gives you an indication in terms of the level of inclusion around LGBTI in sports. It's a long, long way to go.
Is it on the uptick, though? I mean, is there enough kind of, I guess, media exposure, enough athletes speaking up that we are seeing some genuine change, or not nearly as fast as we'd hope for?
Look, there is change. There's evidence, research projects and things like that, that does suggest there are change. And the fact we are having conversations, although the Hannah Mounsey decision, for example, was a bit of a negative one to start with, the fact that we're having these conversations, that AFL are being forced to develop transgender policies and LGBTI policies, is a positive thing. So there is change happening, but again, it's very, very slow. And if you compare it to maybe the corporate sector in terms of their diversity work around LGBTI, they're really quite advanced and ahead.
Where do we put the pressure? It certainly can't be on the athletes to speak up. Is the pressure on the sporting bodies in that case to make these changes internally?
Yeah. Look, there's a lot of, at the institution level, sport is sport that's slow to respond to. There's a lot of programs and initiatives that are grassroots. There's a lot of diversity champions. For example, Jason Ball's done a lot of advocacy and work in the LGBT sport space and the AFL specifically. It's actually the institution level and these organisations. They're the ones, key individuals, who can actually make things happen. So an example, if sport wanted to introduce very strict guidelines around homophobia to stop homophobia in the stands, for example, at football matches or soccer matches, they could introduce policies that would, for example, introduce a lifetime ban or something like that, which they've done in the UK now. And FIFA is starting to do a lot more work around that. But these policies and these things aren't in place. So until they are, nothing's really going to happen. If you want homophobia to stop or you want transphobia to be addressed, you put things in place to stop that. So unless the sports do something about it, then nothing really is going to happen.
Well, let's hope that 2018 might be the year we start seeing a bit of major systemic change from within. Dr. Reinstor, thank you so much for your time this morning.